Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Friday, June 21st, 2019. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Ion College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and he really is here with me. He and I wrapped earlier tonight our NBA draft coverage for CBS Sports HQ here in Stamford, Connecticut. So it's 2:45 in the morning. We're in Stamford, Connecticut.
My God.
I got a flight that leaves White Plains at 7 a.m., but we wanted to get a podcast in, so here we are. How you doing, Matt Norlander?
We have spent almost 24 consecutive hours together.
Woo!
You should just move up to Connecticut.
Nope.
Yeah, I think you should. I think we can make this this podcast a face-to-face thing much more frequently. Hey, listen, we did an HQ show for 7+ hours.
Oh, God.
That was a blast. You killed it. I killed it. Early shouts to Hakeem Dermish. Esteemed host, and we had Avery Johnson. He was great on the show. In addition to Bill Ryder, Evan Daniels, Reed Forgrave. It was fun times all around. Zion goes one as expected. We're going to obviously deal with the NBA draft on this episode. We're gonna play it fun and loose here. GP and I don't get a lot of chances to do face-to-face podcasts. We're going to do that for you right here and now. We know that you know what happened at the top of the draft with Zion, then Ja Morant, then RJ Barrett as expected, and then the wrinkle in terms of New Orleans trading the pick to go to DeAndre Hunter at fourth. GP, let's kick it off with the top of the draft here. I mean, what sticks out to you? What are the biggest talking points the Friday after the draft and the things that you think will wind up being most remembered, you know, 5-10 years from now?
Well, let's spend just a couple of minutes on the very top of the draft, because this will go down, for better or worse, as the Zion Williamson draft. It's no surprise that he went number one. We've known he was going to go number one probably since November. We've known he was going to play for the Pelicans since the moment the Pelicans secured the top pick in the NBA draft lottery. And yet, still, you saw it after his name was announced. He got emotional. He took a moment, bowed his head, perhaps to pray, perhaps just to take a moment. But either way, he teared up, cried real tears, because I don't care how long you've known that you were going to be exactly what he was, the number one pick in the draft, still hearing your name called is a dream come true. It's the realization of a dream. I imagine every little kid who plays basketball dreams of maybe having that moment. So few, almost none, ever experience it. Zion Williamson got to experience it, and I thought we saw real raw emotion. This is a guy who will go on and probably do amazing things, but he'll also always have this night when Adam Silver walked onto a stage, Barclays Center, and said, "You are the number one pick in the 2019 NBA draft."
Yeah, awesome moment. And crying Zion meme, I think, might have been born tonight as well, passing the torch from crying MJ, but maybe it won't quite stick. Fantastic. The idea of bringing parents onto the interview platform with the players as well, I thought was pretty inspired, because it made for some memorable emotional moments there. Zion Williamson, quick question for you. I didn't ask you this on HQ. Has Zion Williamson already hit his peak of, I don't want to say basketball relevance, because I think that he, just because of who he is and having the NBA platform, I think he'll have big moments. But with as big of a deal as he was at Duke,
right,
from the start of November until basically now, I really think that you could say that he was the biggest story in all of basketball. Is Zion Williamson ever going to match that level of noise and relevance? Or is that even too much to ask, considering what he did and how he became the focus of so much coverage on multiple networks over the past 7 months?
Yeah, well, right now, what he is, is one of the 10 most famous basketball players on the planet, maybe 5 most famous basketball players on the planet.
He's getting there already.
And he is considered to be the next great thing. Now, when you are considered to be the next great thing, you are a big thing. But then you have to go and become the next great thing, or else we won't forget about you, but we'll think of you differently pretty quickly. It was just 2 years ago. Lonzo Ball was supposed to be the next great point guard in that Lakers organization. He was going to be the thing with Magic Johnson's arm wrapped around him who brought that franchise back to where it ought to be. And he was recently traded to New Orleans less than 2 years later. So this stuff can change on you pretty quickly. To be clear, I'm betting on Zion Williamson, but the truth is the bar's really high. You know, if he doesn't from this moment, you know, spend the next few years solidifying his place as an NBA All-Star. Several years down the road, competing, if not winning, MVPs. Someday, getting a championship or three. Then he will, by definition, be considered something less than what, on this night, people thought he was going to be. And so it's tough, man. He's going to have to become one of the best players in the world, if not the best player in the world, to ever meet these expectations. The last person to enter the league with this type of hype was LeBron James, and somehow he met the expectations, lived up to the hype.
Blew past them, even.
I think blew past them.
Yeah.
But, man, it's hard to blow past the expectations when the expectations are what they are.
Yeah, and Zion's been built up and built up and built up, and rightfully so over the past 7 months. Our sports culture sometimes just loves to tear people down. I think Zion Williamson is more likely to be a multi-time All-Star than an outright bust, but we'll see. I like what the Pelicans did around him. Jackson Hayes going eighth. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, I think, are two fantastic picks. But real quick, let's talk about your Memphis Grizzlies. John Morant goes second, to be expected. And then Brandon Clark falls way down to them. I just, for what they had, GP, just two picks. Ton of fun there. I think Morant is a perfect culture fit. I think Clark is as well. And Memphis, you know, even though they got more work to do and they got, you know, they got a big hill to climb here, it wouldn't surprise me if they became like the NBA league pass hit young team to watch, taking that mantle from either Phoenix or Sacramento.
I won't bore you with all the details, but this is a franchise that went to seven straight Western Conference playoffs with a core four of Mike Conley, Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol, and Tony Allen. They're all gone now. Mike Conley traded the last piece the day before the NBA draft. This organization is also being run by a brand-new front office, brand-new president of basketball operations, a guy named Jason Wexler, who's a lawyer with no traditional basketball background. Zach Kleiman is now the de facto general manager, 30 years old, 30 years old, and lawyer, no traditional basketball background. And so people are obviously I don't want to say skeptical, but curious. Like, what is these are the people running your basketball franchise now? And I think in a span of roughly 24 hours on Wednesday and Thursday of this week, they went a long way in not only eliminating some questions about themselves, but also providing hope to the fan base. They were able to move Mike Conley to Utah for a package that include three players, including Grayson Allen, who was a top 25 pick in last year's draft and didn't play much this year in Utah, but only because a rookie draft in the 20s isn't going to play much for a playoff team, regardless of the rookie or the team. They also got a first-round pick in this draft, the 23rd, and a future first-round pick, and they, in this draft, once Brandon Clark started to slip, recognized maybe he won't come all the way to 23, but we can go up to 21 and get him. They take that Utah pick, turn it into 21. They take Brandon Clark, who fits perfectly, I think, in theory, besides Jaren Jackson Jr. And now you've got a young core of Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Brandon Clark to build around. I can just tell you from watching on social media and text messages from my friends, people in Memphis, and I think people around the league, you think that Memphis knocked it out of the park tonight, and it's been a long time since you could say that about the Grizzlies, the lone exception being when they took Jaren Jackson fourth last year. Keep in mind, this is the same franchise that in 2009, after Blake Griffin was taken, decided to take Hashim Thabeet when James Harden and Steph Curry were on the board. This franchise, basically from picking Mike Conley all the way up until when it picked Jaren Jackson Jr., just consistently missed in the first round. I think they got last year right. I think they got this year right.
I do, too. I had Brandon Clark as a top 12 prospect in this draft. The reason why he slipped was of his age, not a good perimeter shooter, and that's about it because high-level athleticism, really good defender.
Well, he's size stuff, too. He's short for his position, not a great wingspan for his position. But I'm with you. I'm glad they took
him.
I have gone on radio the day after the draft and absolutely destroyed the Grizzlies before.
Yeah.
It won't be like that tomorrow. They got John Morant. They got Brandon Clark. I'm happy. I think most people are.
This was never a three-person draft. We spoke often about this on our HQ draft show and to our listeners of the podcast and those who were able to tune in and watch us. Our sincere thanks. We had a lot of fun on that show all night long, evaluating picks, grading picks, and poking some fun at each other and just having a good time. But I have just railed against the idea that this is a three-person draft. No draft in the history of NBA drafts has ever been a three-person draft. You always have many more players than that that become relevant, starters, all-stars, Hall of Famers, what have you. I think that the Hawks and the Pelicans prove that at the very least by having some movement there at four. DeAndre Hunter goes to the Hawks. I think that's a nice pick right behind, obviously, RJ Barrett, who goes to the Knicks at three. And what wound up happening was 1 through 7 in this draft shook out the way that just about everyone thought. Yeah. Because then you had Garland 5 to Cleveland, Culver 6 to Minnesota, Kobe White 7 to Chicago. There might have been a little bit of jumbling between 4 and 7 overall in terms of what players went where. But I like Hunter at 4. And overall, like, if you told me that two of Hunter, Garland, Culver, and White, two of those four wound up being better than two of the three of Zion, Ja, and RJ, GP, I don't think that's implausible. If you go back and look at the history of all NBA drafts, the second and third pick, and even obviously sometimes the first, it's just no sure thing. So just keep that in mind, because you're not going to hear nearly as much hype or talk with Hunter or Garland, Culver or White, or even Jackson Hayes at 8, who I really, really like. But the potential's there. They could wind up being the bigger stars.
People had different opinions on Garland and White. I like Darius Garland. You like Kobe White. Not you and I, but people.
Sure.
People would argue over DeAndre Hunter and Jarrett Culver. But basically, as you point out, everybody had Zion Williamson, Ja Morant, RJ Barrett, DeAndre Hunter, Darius Garland, Jarrett Culver, Kobe White going 1 through 7 in some order. And that is exactly what happened. They went 1 through 7 in a certain order. So the draft really started at 8. And I know you liked what New Orleans did there. I was less of a fan of it, but Jackson Hayes went 8. And that's really where the draft started to throw some curveballs.
If Jackson Hayes, who has high-level athleticism but is very raw, winds up hitting and clicking, and Zion Williamson does the same, this draft will go down, not an infamy because that's a negative connotation, but it will be an all-time draft for the Pelicans. And then Nikhil Alexander-Walker, even further down, I think that he's got really high-level potential. They took him at 17. I do like a lot of what's happened there. In between, you know, you had Cameron Johnson going 11th, which was the first stunner. Chuma Okeke at 16, another stunner. I thought Brandon Clark was a mild surprise, dropping as low as he did to 21. Grant Williams at 22, I can tell you that was surprising, to the point where Grant Williams and his camp did not attend the draft in Brooklyn because they weren't convinced he was going to be a first-round pick. Lo and behold, he goes to Boston. GP, I really like that pick. And then the other surprises is Nasir Little dropping all the way to 25th. Darius Bazley, meanwhile, goes 23rd. Jordan Poole to Golden State at 28 was surprising to me. Then Kevin Porter Jr. dropping all the way to 30. So that's many of the picks in the first round. We pan the Cam Reddish one at HQ. We pan Romeo Langford to Boston at 14. It's nothing against the players. It's more about their styles, where they're going, and the other prospects that were available around them. Romeo Langford was one of the 20 best prospects in this draft, but I just don't think his particular skill set happens to set up all that well with what Boston has, both in this draft haul and with its roster overall. What things stand out to you? If you want to go to Reddish, we can. I don't have an issue with Cam Johnson at 11 because if he winds up being this incredible shooter 3 years from now, if that's the case, from a talent perspective and from a production perspective, it's not going to matter whether Phoenix got him at 11 or if they, I know we've talked about this, wanted to wait and hang back until 16, 17, 18 and gotten him, which they could have done, but we'll see what winds up happening. What else sticks out to you beyond the obviousness of the mainstream talking points that everyone's going to hear in all these other places about the top 4 or 5 picks?
Well, let's focus on the two Cams real quick. I don't have much new to say about Cam Reddish. If you listen to this podcast, you know what I think of him. I see the same stuff that you guys see in terms of potential. Like, he looks great standing there. When he shoots it, if you just focus on his form and don't look at, like, whether the ball goes in or not, looks great. But he hasn't been a great basketball player. He's been a great prospect, and I would not have taken him in the top 10. I'm not surprised he went in the top 10. I would not have taken him in the top 10. And there was a moment that I don't know if it got enough attention on the day of the draft, but I thought it was significant, if only because it jived with everything I've heard about Cam Reddish. There was a college basketball analyst on radio in North Carolina, the Dave Glenn Show, and he was a guest. Same way you're a guest on shows and I'm a guest on shows, and he's being asked about prospects, and he was asked about Cam Reddish. And this guest, this college basketball analyst on the show, he said, if Cam Reddish is a great three-point shooter, why does he never make three-pointers? And if he's a great athlete, why does he never get anything done at the rim? I just don't know what he does on a basketball court. And that wouldn't be eye-raising if it came from me, because you've heard it from me. If it came from Norlander, because you probably heard it from Norlander. If it came from most people who have jobs like us. But the college basketball analyst who said those things on radio publicly a few hours before the draft started was Chris Spatola. And Chris Spatola is not just a college basketball analyst. He's Mike Krzyzewski's son-in-law. And there's just no scenario where I can imagine Mike Krzyzewski's son-in-law is on radio saying those things about Cam Reddish, unless that's exactly what Mike Krzyzewski thinks about Cam Reddish. And if that's what Mike Krzyzewski thinks about Cam Reddish, I wouldn't touch him in the top 10. One pick later, Cameron Johnson. And that, as you point out, was the first real, like, what in the world? Because no matter what you think of Jackson Hayes, everybody could acknowledge Jackson Hayes might go in the top 8. Yeah. But Cameron Johnson going in the top 11? I don't think you can find one person who does this for a living who thought Cameron Johnson was going to go in the top 11. And imagine if you're a Suns fan. Earlier this week, you're projected to pick 6th, and the questions are whether you can get Darius Garland or maybe even Kobe White. You need a point guard. Fast forward through the draft, you've traded out of 6 down to 11 and end up taking somebody nobody had going in the top 15. That's Cameron Johnson. And like you said, he's a great shooter. I don't know what else he is, but he is a great shooter. But if you want to trade down to get Cameron Johnson, I don't think you need to trade down to 11. You could probably trade outside of the top 15 and get that done. I'm not saying it'll be the most horrendous thing you've ever seen. It just does seem dumb in real time because you took the 6th pick in a draft where Jarrett Culver and Kobe White were both available to you, and you essentially flipped that for Cameron Johnson and 1 year of Dario Saric. Huh?
Yeah.
It's not what I would have done if I were running the Phoenix Suns.
I don't disagree with it on the surface, but if he winds up being a really productive player down the line, and Cameron Johnson, credit to him for, despite his age getting picked so high, it was a stunner. There was a...
So much of a stunner that Kobe White was...
Amazing reaction.
Handling his press conference. I'm sure you guys have seen it. But he's handling his press conference, and somebody says, Cameron Johnson was just picked 11th. And he went, picked what? What?
Wow, bro.
Wow.
Bro, wow.
Even Kobe White could not believe Cameron Johnson was picked 11th. And I know that, you know, the commentary connected to that moment might be, look how happy Kobe White was for Cameron Johnson. And I'm sure he was happy. In fact, he said, he verbalized it, I'm so happy right now. But he was surprised before he was happy. He was shocked before he was filled with joy. He could not believe Cameron Johnson was picked 11th in this or any other draft.
It's true. So I think we acknowledge Cam Reddish, Cam Johnson, back-to-back Cams, reaches there. Didn't love the Romeo pick. I thought Okiki at 16 to the Orlando was a little bit of a reach. Not too many other reaches in the first round. Do want to talk about what I think was the biggest story of the first round, not related to the lottery. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, check this out.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third-row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Okay, GP. So you have Nasir Little fall to 25 to Portland. And as we talked about on HQ, it was just an ongoing development that was exacerbated by the fact that Nasir Little, a year ago, projected top three pick almost universally, top five for sure, top two even in some mock drafts. He was the third ranked prospect in the class of 2018. He drops to 25. Darius Bazley, meanwhile, eschews playing at Syracuse, bypasses even going into the G League, gets a lot of money to become an intern for New Balance, and he winds up going 23rd. So we're a college basketball podcast. Obviously, this specific one is very draft-oriented and reaction-oriented, but there is a college basketball talking point that we should touch on real quick here. And that's basically getting picked ahead of Little by two spots, whereas if Little had never played a game of college, I don't see, even if everything else played out the way it did, I think his absolute floor would have been like sixth. The floor. Instead, all the way down to 25, basically goes 23. My opinion is, if you're a five-star prospect, a top 20, top 25 type prospect, this kind of development at least probably sparks more of a conversation about where you might want to go if you want to consider some stuff overseas, because it's not like the other guys who came back and improved their draft stock, DeAndre Hunter, John Morant, even Zion Williamson, who was the rare one-and-done player, like, undeniably, college did him great. But Nasir Little was not done well by any means. And his situation juxtaposed against Bazley, I think, is really one of the most interesting things about draft night.
Well, some people would say, listen, Nasir Little, if he can't play, he can't play. And he was always going to get exposed at some point. But if he never played college basketball, he would have got exposed at some point after he was picked fifth or sixth in an NBA draft. Because this time last year, basically everybody had R.J. Barrett number one. And basically everybody also had Nasir Little number two or number three. I had him number two. And you might say if Nasir Little never played a college basketball game, he would have subsequently been passed by Zion Williamson. And then R.J. Barrett would have still been ahead of him. And John Morant would have jumped ahead of him. And so now he's the fourth pick in the draft. Okay, he's still the fourth pick, fifth pick, sixth pick. I agree with you. There's no way he goes outside of the top five or six. But instead, he goes to North Carolina. And he plays behind two upperclassmen who are very good. And let's be honest, he also wasn't very good. I was told by people around that program that when they got him on campus, they realized pretty quickly that he doesn't know how to play the way that they thought he knew how to play.
Yeah.
And he didn't pick up the things that they needed him to pick up as quickly as they needed him to do it. And when you are competing with other freshmen who might be trying to pick up stuff too, that's one thing. But when you're competing against Cam Johnson and Luke May for playing time, well,
exactly.
Good luck. So he got caught in a bad spot. But either way, it cost him dearly. And not just like in prestige or awards, but in money, millions. If you'll, for the sake of the conversation, acknowledge that he could have, without ever playing a basketball game, been maybe the second pick in the draft. The second pick in the draft is slotted to sign a two-year guaranteed contract worth $14.9 million. First-round picks.
That's guaranteed money.
Guaranteed money. If you are selected because of the rookie scale in the first round, there is some percentages that can be negotiated, but basically you're going to make this amount of money. It's a two-year contract worth X. For the two-pick, it's a two-year contract worth $14 million. $14.9 million. For the 25th pick, which is Nasir Little, it's a two-year contract worth $3.6 million. That's a difference of $11.3 million. You can reasonably suggest that Nasir Little, by playing college basketball, as opposed to doing nothing, cost himself in excess of $10 million. And you can especially make that point when, as you point out, Darius Bazley went two spots ahead of him, because there's not a person on the planet, including all the people who run professional basketball franchises in this country, who would have taken Darius Bazley ahead of Nasir Little a year ago. What is the only thing that happened between then and now? Darius Bazley never played a game, and Nasir Little played a bunch. And now Nasir Little went two spots below Darius Bazley, cost himself millions and millions of dollars. And I don't think it's going to change the sport because, like, as you pointed out, Zion Williamson was a five-star prospect, projected top 10 pick. He went to college and probably made like $75 million based on being the number one pick in the draft.
Oh, yeah.
Plus the shoe deal, maybe more.
Maybe
so
more.
So this can cut both ways, but it cut the wrong way on Nasir Little. I don't think it's changing the sport, but it is something to consider. If you were already projected to be a top five guy, top 10 guy, do you want to go to college and risk being a borderline first round guy? Or in Bol Bol's case, slipping completely out of the first round. I don't think Bol Bol slipped for the same reasons Nasir Little slipped, but there's a possible lesson there about what are you risking by putting yourself on display and what are you preserving by just taking an internship at New Balance, working out, but not playing in any competitive games whatsoever.
Yeah, it's... I didn't expect this. I thought there were.
Well,
I mean, no, if you could have gotten action on that pre-draft,
well, let me tell
Bazley
you,
going before Little.
Oh yeah. Or how about well, this is all you need to know. Forget what I thought about the draft or you thought about the draft. Vegas had the over/under on where will Nasir Little be picked in the draft at 12.5. He got picked 25th. I think that's double.
Your math is on point right now.
You took Vegas doesn't usually miss by that much. So it was an awful, awful night for Nasir Little. It doesn't mean he can't go on and have a nice career. But here's the other thing. The other issue with slipping in a draft is that you almost always are going to end up on a better team, which makes it harder to play.
That's right.
So, like, if Nasir Little went to North Carolina and had trouble getting on the court because of players who were already there, now you're going to Portland, and I don't have Portland's roster right in front of me, but it is much harder for a one-and-done rookie to get quality minutes for a team competing for a Western Conference title than it is to get quality minutes for a team that's competing for much, much less, and in some cases, absolutely nothing.
Yeah, the continuation of the Nasir Little story will be very interesting. Maybe we look up and he's a top 10 player from this draft. It wouldn't be a stunner because you'll so often see guys that were highly rated coming out of high school. They're mostly given the benefit of the doubt. That's why Little's situation, like it's even Michael Porter, who had health concerns, didn't drop nearly as far. Real quick to wrap up the first round, then we'll talk to Bol. I'll talk about Bol Bol and maybe get out of here. It's getting late.
It's been late, bro.
It's been late, that's for sure. There is a nice window here in that first round, though. It starts with Thybulle at 20 to Philly, Clark 21 to Memphis, 22 Grant Williams, Boston, Bazley, Oklahoma 23, Ty Jerome to Phoenix at 24, Little 25 to Portland, Dylan Windler to the Cavs at 26, Fiondu Cabangeli 27 to the Clippers. I think there's a good chance that we get at least two of those guys, if not three, that wind up having really impressive college careers of that group. I actually think that I love Thybulle, but at 20, I think that's about right. To me, Cabangeli went about 6 to 8 spots too low. I think he's going to I'm going to preempt your line here because I agree with you. You know, you don't think there are going to be 23 players that wind up being better than Ty Jerome in this draft. I would agree with that. I don't think there will be 12 or 13 players that wind up 6 or 7 years from now better in this draft than Fiondu Cabangeli. At 27 to the Clippers, I think that's an absolute steal. So as we get to the back end of the first round, just wanted to highlight a couple of guys. I like Cabangeli. You're all the way in on Jerome.
I am. You know, the Grizzlies started on Thursday morning with the 23rd pick. And I only bring them up because I end up having to talk about them a lot on my radio show. But I had Ty Jerome slotted to go there. And I told Memphis fans, you should be happy if you get him. Because he's a 6'5 guard, can play either position, dribble, pass, shoot, 40% from three-point range, national champion, can obviously guard because you have to at Virginia. I understand that there are probably 23 players with higher upsides than Ty Jerome, I guess. I'm not certain of that, but if you want to make the argument, I'll concede the point, but then I'll come back with this. There's not going to be 23 players better than Ty Jerome from this draft. There just won't be. I mean, we are in a world where in the NBA these days, players who can just dribble, pass, and shoot and know how to play, just guys who know how to play, who can dribble, pass, and shoot, they figure it out. They figure out a way to stay on the court. Ty Jerome is all of those things. I'll be shocked if he's not on an NBA roster for a long, long time.
Yeah, I love his game. Three Virginia players picked in this draft, Hunter, then Jerome. Kyle Guy, rightfully selected. He went down in the back end of the second round. He'll go to the Kings with the 55th pick. I want to close on Bol Bol, but before we get there, just a few name drops. Love Justin Wright Foreman out of Hofstra going 53 to the Jazz. Rightfully rewarded. Tremont Waters out of LSU gets picked, goes to Boston. Naz Reid did not. I think he is – Naz Reid and Lu Dort were two of the biggest snubs here. Carson Edwards was the biggest name taken in the second round. He went 33 to the Celtics there. They needed some shooting. They got him. I love Eric Paschal to the Golden State Warriors. I hated their Jordan Poole pick in the first round, but I thought Paschal was actually a pretty good pickup. And then they picked up Dedrick Lawson after the draft. Couple other guys of note there, but we'll skip on out and let's just wrap here because it's been late. Let's wrap with Bol Bol. Drops all the way to 44, goes to Denver. That's the second straight year they take a reclamation project off an injury. Last year was Michael Porter Jr., who they got late in the first round. You know, similar to Nasir Little, Michael Porter Jr. one time was considered a top two pick. Bol Bol sets a record. I don't think we'll ever see the likes of this again because I think the NBA is going to try its damnedest, even though it does it every year. You can't have a guy invited to a green room, GP.
Sitting there like that.
You cannot have him going. Second round, generally speaking, but even like, okay, 31, 34, 35, maybe. Bol Bol was sitting there till 44, and this is a guy who plenty of people still acknowledge. Like, just if you could just extract the talent out of him, top 10 in this draft, drops to 44, a cautionary tale, and we wait to see. I will root for him to prove a lot of people wrong because it was a sad sight seeing him sit there that long.
Yeah, it was sad. You know, I always spend a lot of time, you know, trying to imagine myself in people's shoes. And, you know, if you're a basketball player, and Bol Bol's been one for a long time, perhaps his whole life, you always dream of this night. It's supposed to be right up there with your wedding night, with the birth of your child. You know, this night you look forward to forever. And now it's here. It's your dream coming true. You've been invited to the green room at the NBA draft. Amazing. And now it's your nightmare. I mean, you're sitting there and it gets lonely. Like when you sit down, Zion's over there and Ja's right there.
It's a party to start.
And then you look up, you're the only one still there. You ever looked up and been the only dude in the bar?
That's GP. So this is the first draft I did not attend since I've been at every draft since 2011. When you get to like the mid 40s at the Barclays Center and no one's left in the green room, most of the media is not even there.
It's lonely.
It is a depressing scene from about 44, 45 on. Yeah. And Bol Bol was still at the table with that spiderweb jacket on.
I felt like, my God, you ever been in a bar by yourself middle of the night with a spider jacket on?
I haven't, but I feel like you've done that at least once in your life.
I mean, probably. If I had to bet yes or no, it sounds like something I've done. Reminds me of me. And so, yeah, I felt sick for him. That's keep in mind, Bol Bol coming into college has always been told, yeah, man, you're a lottery. He's never been told he's not a lottery pick. And then even heading into this, if you're trying to prepare him for like, you know, hey, just want to make sure you know where we're at. Still a first-round pick. Almost nobody thought that he would actually slip past the mid-20s. Maybe the early 30s, but then somebody's just going to scoop him up because you just do that at some point. 44? And I'm not even saying they're wrong. It seems clear to me some franchises just decided he's not on our board. We don't take him no matter what. Because he's 7'2", coming off foot surgery. We don't know if he can guard in space. The league's getting smaller. Like, you know, the questions about work ethic, focus, love of the game. There's like, when you talk about reasons not to draft somebody, he's got a whole bunch. Now, he's got a whole bunch of reasons to draft him, too, or at least some. But there's a whole bunch of reasons not to. And so I think that what we saw in that draft, him slip to 44, was a byproduct of a lot of different things, including the way the game is played. But I felt sad for him. That's a lonely situation and a humbling situation. And so all you can hope is that if there really are issues with his focus, with his love of the game, with his desire to want to be as great as he can be, that this is the thing that humbles him and makes him realize for the first time, dude, just because your whole life people told you you're going to be a lottery pick never meant that it was going to happen, and then it didn't happen. And now if you don't go earn your way, you won't even be in the NBA at all. Forget being an NBA star, which is what I'm sure you thought you were going to be your whole life. You won't even be in the NBA at all. I don't know that it'll be a wake-up call for him, and perhaps he doesn't need a wake-up call. Maybe he just needs the game to be played differently, or a more fluid movement. It just might not be there for him. But what a humbling experience. This is the simplest way to put it. Anytime the night you thought were going to be your dream ends up being your nightmare, that's a hell of a turn of events.
Yeah, and it would be great to see him find some real success there. I said it on the HQ show, if we look up in a few years from now and Bol Bol is, you know, even an NBA-level starter, it's going to be an indictment on most, if not the entire league, that he dropped this far. But he had so many red flags around him. Let's wrap this up. I will note, just in College Basketball Podcast, here are some notable guys that did not get drafted. By the time you're listening to this, most, if not all of them, will have agreed to some sort of two-way deals, because that's how this goes. But no Naz Reid, who I think is going to be a starter in 3 years. No Lu Dort out of Arizona State. Terrence Davis out of Ole Miss. Has great workouts. He didn't get anything. Jonte Porter. We talked about Michael Porter Jr. Jonte Porter does not get drafted. Zillin Cheatham. Shamari Ponds, a little bit of a surprise there as well. And then Lewis King out of Oregon. So they're just a couple names that popped to mind. Dedrick Lawson as well, but he signed a deal with Golden State. We are,
and by the way, that might not be the worst thing, because
might not.
Golden State's going to need cheap labor to go with all these other contracts.
That's true.
They need cheap contracts, and so you know Dedrick could look up and be playing for the Warriors next year.
Yeah, I'll also note that Tyus Battle was not drafted. He would have been drafted last year, came back, and he did not get picked. Sometimes these things, it's a tough deal, man.
Well, we talk about John Morant coming back to school, improving himself tremendously. PJ Washington coming back to school, improving himself tremendously. The other stories are out there. Tyus Battle comes back to school, boom, the other way. Daniel Gafford would have been a first-round pick, I think, last year. Decides to come back to school. I'm going to become a lottery pick. No, you're not. Now you're in the second round. So just keep that in mind going forward. Not everybody who says they're going to improve their stock actually does. There's the Tyus Battle and the Daniel Gafford stories too.
No doubt about it. Okay, so GP, we've done a great job in getting you a podcast every week of this offseason so far, but GP's going to take a vacation next week, so the next pod after this one will be in July, and then we're going to be on the road in July. We'll do some more face-to-face, person-to-person podcasts, because this is a great rhythm, a great flow that we've got going on here. So your final words before a much-deserved, long-awaited, highly anticipated vacation for the Parrish family.
My final words are as follows. Okay. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Tigo, the legend. Shouts to the homie Larnell. It's been fun doing the face-to-face podcast. I don't know that I want to talk to anybody at my age at 3:18 in the morning, but if I got to talk to somebody, I'd like it to be you.
This is a podcast record, by the way. We have never gone this late.
I am exhausted.
So am I. We'll share the story behind the podcast maybe some weeks from now. Let's wrap this
It'll
up.
Make for a good story someday.
Not right now.
But not today.
Not today. All right. You know what? F it. I'm going to wrap this up. Be sure to rate the podcast in iTunes, Apple Podcasts. We're available on Stitcher, on Spotify, all that stuff. It's the off season. If you have not yet rated the podcast, we could use a few 5 stars and nice reviews. Be sure to get that done right now. I'm letting Parrish off the hook early. He's going to take a vacation. We'll talk to you in about 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. We'll chat you in July. See ya.